When Hydrogen Boy came back, he saw another supervillain. It was the Puppet Master, another one of his foes. "My super-powered puppet bats shall get you, Hydrogen Boy," said the Puppet Master. "Not if I can help it," said Hydrogen Boy. "But you can't," said the Puppet Master. "My super bats have an ultrasonic device located in them for radar, and the ultrasonic sound waves are so great in intensity that they will knock you senseless as you hear them." "Thanks for telling me," said Hydrogen Boy. "Now I can help it." And so saying, he formed solid hydrogen earplugs and put them in his ears. Then he attacked the bats as they flew at him. They were comparatively harmless now, and he easily destroyed the lifeless artificial bats. Then he took the Puppet Master to jail.
The author of that bit of science fiction was Craig, a sixth grader at New Richmond. But it could have been you.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University brings you Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about the process of writing creatively. The program is conducted by Jacqueline Jackson, children's author. To begin today's program, here's Ken Ost.
The title of today's program, Jackie, is Skunk Boy. Explain that, please.
Well, Hydrogen Boy, Skunk Boy. I was delighted with Craig's parody on comic strip heroes, and it reminded me that I had written my own parody on comic strip heroes when I was young. I remember one summer, the boy next door had a stack of 30 or 40 comic books of Submariner and the Flame.
Oh.
Now, I was familiar with Batman and Superman and, oh, what else was there?
Well, there was Buck Rogers in the comic strips, of course.
That's right. And the Green Hornet over the radio, and so forth. But these two characters in the different comics books were pitted against each other. And sometimes Super Fire would win, and sometimes Super Water would win. And it was hard to figure out which one was the good guy or the bad guy of these two superheroes. And after I had read probably most of the 40 comic books, I got sort of bored with them. And the formula was always the same, and so I determined to write my own comic book. And I dug it out of my old portfolio from grade school days, and here's Skunk Boy. My prose isn't anything like Craig's is. He's got much more humor, and I think I was concentrating too hard on the pictures. Skunk Boy wears a black and white suit with a tail, and of course you don't have to guess very hard what his super weapon is, do you?
I don't think so.
But I discovered something of interest fairly recently when my father was telling me when he was in bed with the measles, the room was kept dark. I don't think they do that anymore.
I don't think so.
But measles were supposed to affect the eyes, and I think that they did, but not necessarily on account of reading or light. But he wasn't able to read. And he had the measles down at his aunt's house, and she was taking care of him, and she felt so sorry for poor little Ronnie, who couldn't read, that she read to him out loud out of the local newspaper, the Beloit Daily News, the continued story, which he had been avidly following, and the story was Batman.
Way back then?
And this would have been 1911, I figured it out. And I said to my father, "Batman?" I said, "You don't mean the Batman?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "You mean cape and mask and valiant deeds and all was in the Beloit Daily News in 1911? And he says, "That's right." And he was very exciting. So I had my eyes opened. I thought that Superman and Batman and so forth had come in, you know, in around the 30s or so when I was a little kid. But here Batman is going back at least till 1911, and he may go back considerably further than that, if we but knew.
You mentioned that Batman goes back, at least we know, to at least 1911. Were there any heroes before that?
Literature is filled with heroes.
By heroes, of course, I mean the super sort of guys.
Well, it's filled with superheroes.
Uh-huh.
If you go all the way back to Well, say the very first epic that we know anything about, which is the Gilgamesh epic, which was found on the clay tablets in Sumeria. These heroes aren't necessarily flying around in the air, containing all the magic power within in themselves, but they have the aid of the various gods that give them the supernatural powers. And sometimes they have super strength themselves. So that we have superheroes that are able to do godlike things operating on the human plane from very early literature. And I imagine that Batman and Superman and so forth are a tradition.
When you were writing Skunk Boy, for example, did you intend it to be funny or just exciting? Or which direction did you go, if you did think about that at all?
Yes, I was deliberately trying to write a parody, just as I think that Craig, with his Hydrogen Boy, was also writing a parody of superhero literature.
Now, there's a word that maybe we should talk about for a moment, parody. What makes up a parody?
A parody is a sort of kidding of something. There are various words we could use. Parody, a spoof, satire is a word that is often used in literature, where you are making fun of something. It doesn't necessarily have to be another form of literature, but it can be. Harvard has a humor magazine called the Harvard Lampoon, and a lampoon is probably a broader type of humor than a parody, maybe less subtle. I don't know what the distinctions are of these words, but spoofs, parodies, satires, lampoons, they're all a kind of humorous kidding, although they can be very bitter, too. A satire can have an edge of a very biting humor. I think Skunk Boy and Hydrogen Boy, these are sort of humorous satires. I don't see a really cutting, biting, hurting edge on these sorts of stories.
Now, Skunk Boy was your product, and Hydrogen Boy was Craig's product. Are there some parodies that are going on today that we all know?
Oh, yeah. I was talking to some school kids about this idea, and they mentioned Mighty Mouse. Now, Mighty Mouse is really, this is on TV, I think, and Mighty Mouse is probably a parody of both Superman and Mickey Mouse, the idea that a mouse is able to do all these tremendous things, and I think that Atom Ant is probably...
I've never heard of him, Atom Ant.
Small as an ant and insignificant as an ant, but has the power of the atom.
Now, we have one, think of it, in Little Abner, where you have a kind of a takeoff on a famous detective, right?
Yes, Little Abner's hero is a spoof of Dick Tracy, Fearless Fosdick. Not only looks like Dick Tracy, but follows the same type of adventures, but they are even more exaggerated than Dick Tracy. So here is a parody of a comic strip in a comic strip.
Mm-hmm.
Which is sort of fun. Parodies are lots of fun to write, and sometimes somebody that has never written anything else can get going on a parody, partly because there's something to begin with. You take your comic strip and you begin to make fun of it. You don't have to say, what am I going to write, and here is, you know, the whole world in front of you. You've got your comic strip.
This reminds me of a parody done by Stan Freberg about Betsy Ross and the First Flag. And he calls it, everybody wants to be an art director. And the idea he gets in is everybody had an idea of what colors and what form to make out of it. It was a pretty wild, pretty funny thing. And it's a somewhat sacred subject, and yet it's done nicely, gently.
Yes. Well, this would be something fun to try writing, too. Not necessarily just to take a comic strip character or a superhero, but say to take some sacred moment of history and see what might have happened at that time. As you say, somebody saying, well, they thought the stars ought to go here, and somebody else saying, well, why should they even be stars? Why shouldn't we have anchors for representing the solidarity of the states or something like that?
Right. Mm-hmm.
That would be fun. I'd love to see some stories like that.
Well, now, as far as writing the parodies themselves, we talked for a moment about the fact that things change, and a parody 30 years ago wouldn't even be a parody today. So how do we actually get going on this? Do we take a character necessarily, or what do we do?
It might be fun to think about different sorts of characters. Craig invented Hydrogen Boy. I was asking a small group what sort of characters they could invent if they were to write something like Hydrogen Boy. One boy said, well, how about Prune Man? He could spit pits. This got them going on this sort of thing. Somebody said, well, Super Giggle could kill his enemies with sick jokes. And somebody else said, well, how about Magnificent Meatball? He could shoot spaghetti from a squirt gun. And then the poisoned meatballs could be what would finish people off. And I said, well, who's going to be your enemy? Well, they thought about that a while and thought maybe, you know, Parmesan cheese or something could be the enemy. But that isn't too well worked out. The one that I thought was the funniest was almost spontaneous, a fifth-grade boy named Bruce. He says, well, he says, let's have Super Stew Boy. He said he could shoot carrots. And then he thought a minute. He said he would have to change in the bowl, meaning changing his clothes.
Changing his costume,
or changing from a man, you see, into stew. And then after he said he could change in the bowl, then he said, no, he says, whenever he's in hot water, he turns into a stew. Now, I don't know if he really saw what he was saying, but you know, when you're in hot water, that means when you're in trouble.
Sure.
But also when you're in hot water, if you happen to be meat and potatoes and carrots, you're going to turn into a stew. So I told Bruce that I thought that was pretty good. Say, we shouldn't forget what Robert McCloskey has done in Homer Price. He's got a chapter there called The Cosmic Comic, where the younger kids are believing in a super-duper character who is a parody, really, of Superman. Well, here, read the description of the comic strip.
Okay, Homer took the comic magazine and started to read, while Freddie looked over the shoulder. The beginning of the story, the super-duper was dressed in ordinary clothes, just like any other man. Then, after the villain appeared on the second page, the super-duper slipped behind a tree and changed into red tights and a long blue cape. Why does he always change his clothes like that? Asked Homer. That's because he's so modest, said Freddy in a knowing way. Homer started reading again. After the super-duper had changed his clothes, he started flying through space and smashing things. He picked up automobiles and tossed them over cliffs. He even carried a train across a river after the villain had blown up the bridge. Then finally he saved the pretty girl from a horrible death and caught the villain, who turned out to be a very notorious criminal. Gosh, Freddy, these super-duper stories are all the same, said Homer. No, they're not, said Freddy. Sometimes the super-duper smashes airships, and sometimes he smashes ocean liners. Then other times he just breaks up mountains. But he always rescues the pretty girl and catches the villain on the last page, said Homer. Of course, said Freddy. That's to show that crime does not pay.
This seems to be the outcome of all the superhero comics and stories, that the villain is captured and that crime does not pay. And when we write ours, we'll exaggerate the whole situation. Our villains, our supervillains, will be more comic than the ordinary, notorious villain, perhaps, of Super Duper. And our superhero will be more outlandish than Superman changing his clothes behind a tree, or however that works out.
Now, if we were to start writing a parody right now, right this minute, how would we begin, Jackie?
We could take any sort of thing and try to kid it. For instance, the fractured fairy tales that are over TV, any familiar fairy tale you could take and fracture yourself. Or you could take something like the Betsy Ross story. The title of that might be How It Really Was. And the humor there is the way they were fighting over what the flag was going to be like. If it's going to be the superhero, which we've talked about the most, pick out your superhero. Find some unique quality, such as Hydrogen Boy and Skunk Boy or Stew Boy. preferably humorous for the parody, and then figure out what the super weapon is and get him a proper array of villains to fight against, and then just see what happens when you pit him, super so-and-so against super garlic or something like that. The villain, you know, has his super weapon that he tries to fight back with, too.
Surely.
A twist on this might be your superhero who refuses to function. What if little Clark Kent there in the cradle had refused to be Superman? That here was all this crime going on and he was able to change into his red and blue suit and he preferred to smell the flowers, which brings up, of course, Ferdinand, who was not a super bull in the sense that he had any magic powers. He was just the strongest bull of all. But everyone expected him to get out there and shake his horns and gore the matadors and the picadors and so forth. But Ferdinand just sat down. And so they had to take him back to his cork tree.
He was a peace-loving bull.
He was a peace-loving bull. What if we have a peace-loving superhero? You see, maybe here would be a twist. What could a superhero do who didn't want to shoot his ray gun through the supervillain?
Maybe it's time for that kind of a superhero. Okay, Jackie, so now if all you young authors out there get some good ideas about some outlandish superheroes or parodies, why, let us hear about it, okay?
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.